Astronauts, and welcome to Observations with me, your host, Sovereign Sire. We are brought to you by the good people, or not so good people, at julieland.com. And as always, I'm here with Mr. Dick Avery.
Good evening. Sick. Welcome. Hello. Soft pod's getting really tiny. you need to add a, what do you call it? Like, you need to add an extra room or something.
I need an extra room in the soft
pod.
And a mini bar?
A solarium.
A solarium.
Exactly.
The girl who fell to Earth does not need martinis. I live on air and dreams.
We need a pitcher of mojitos.
My guest today is Hampton Yunt. He was like a 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 comedian to watch.
That's when I was relevant.
You've been like 5 million comedians to watch by like all the important people that watch comedians.
It happened years ago where they were like, you should really watch this guy. Like a bunch of different people, and then like nobody watched.
To be honest, I think that's how I found you on Twitter, because when I was looking for...
Hysterical. But I love like to watch what? Like, hey, yeah. watch him.
Watch him. What? Just watch him.
He might steal your wallet.
Watch him.
Keep an eye on him.
It's like, they're not going to go, what?
Well,
what
are they going to do? This is a good segue into today's topic, which is sort of our relationship to the internet, because I found you by finding
true,
one
that's
of those.
Incredible.
No, I found you by reading an article that was comedians to watch. I was looking for guests on the show, and I have a few comedian friends that... Well, had recommended some people,
right?
But I kind of wanted to find people that were interesting to me, you know, not just sort of like big names that I necessarily wasn't familiar with.
So I went and Googled
like comedian, I think I just Googled hot new comedians, and like kind of just to see like. Not hot physically, but you know what I mean. Like
you had sexy hot,
sexiest, hottest comedians.
But I think I googled something like hot up and coming comedians, and the first thing I clicked on was an article, and it was like you, Chris Fairbanks, Drew Michael, and
I mean I love all these guys.
I forgot there was like two others, and I kind of went and found which of you guys were on Twitter. And just kind of followed all of you, and was like, oh, so kind of like looked you up on the internet. But
started stalking you.
This is how a fan becomes.
This is how you meet a stalker.
but to me, in looking at it, like that's an amazing way that the internet has changed the way that I found an artist. Like I found, because I love you guys.
Can
I love
you
your material.
Yeah.
And I found you. I wouldn't have been able to find you so quickly without having your videos on YouTube, your stuff on iTunes, the reviews available online going like, these are people that are funny that you should be watching. And so I was able to watch from like 2012, like you guys don't have like a lot of stuff on YouTube, but I was able to see you in 2012 and then another clip from 2015.
Yeah.
And so to me, that was like this amazing way that the internet allows a fan to find an artist.
You know, what's an interesting kind of, parallel to that is like, you know, way back in the day, like people would read like a newspaper article that would be like, Lenny Bruce is destroying minds in New York City at 2 a.m. in clubs, you know?
Uh-huh.
And people would then drive in the city because it's like they were told like, this guy will just do everything that you are against. Like, you know, like that was the thing. So that's how people still found out kind of about people, and it was less knowledge of kind of what was going on, but all they told you was just like, this will kind of be subvert your values or whatever, like, you know. And I don't know, like when it's kind of overexposed, it also maybe devalues the stand-up in a weird way. Like sometimes I feel that way about my YouTube sets
Well, no, I mean, but that's the thing,
just
is like
yeah, kind of disposable now.
Well, Stuart Lee, I was watching, he was lecturing at
maybe my favorite comedian.
Get out.
I know exactly which one you're talking about. Where you're talking.
You know who Stuart Lee is.
I have
and
all
you
his
like...
DVDs. I watch his clips of most of the time. He's probably the best.
Oh my God. We're supposed to be friends now. Like you're like
best what?
He's my favorite
stand-up comedian.
He is my absolute favorite, and
probably
no one knows who he is.
He's probably the best. I mean, it's like
he's amazing,
it's
and he could never work on YouTube.
Good. Yeah, exactly. And he makes really good points about how it's like, you know, what he does can't be really compartmentalized to content culture of like Twitter and like trying to put.
But that's like saved him, right?
Yeah, and that saved him because it's like he's also, for one, he's just really great at expressing it. And British culture is also much more like they review stand-up in the newspaper, and it's like an art thing, usually more viewed that way.
Right.
They kind of had like a different path of like alternative comedy and mainstream comedy. Like it was at different times than us, and right. like who knows? Yeah, but anyway, so
he's English.
He's just wonderful. He's British. Yeah.
How long has he been around?
Probably close to like 30 years, because he's
one
of something. The first British alternative stand-up comedians.
He's amazing. I'm tripping out because he's absolutely my absolute favorite.
Yeah, I love him.
And no one knows who he is. And
me too. I always tell my friends too, especially like people who I'm like, you know, Rory Scovel will be like, and he does like him, but I'm like, you gotta check out this latest thing that he did. And he's like, yeah, I love him, but like I feel like it's hard to find people who are like, this guy is literally doing things that make me question doing stand up.
I'm just like, so good.
Yeah. It's like layers of themes going on and kind of like attempting to do jokes, and then it becomes a whole other thing, you know? And it's his conflict with the audience, which is kind of like stuff that's inspired me to take that to stage, is like how much fun the show really can be in the live setting of just like, it's not always about the jokes, it's about like creating a conflict.
Yeah.
Creating a moment that's very individual to the show.
Well, and he was was on Mark Maron's podcast, and they had this long thing about piracy, about joke stealing, about especially sort of in the age of the internet when you've got everything has to fit into sort of these little 2-minute, if it can fit into a 2-minute clip, then it can go up on YouTube, it can become viral, and then Stuart Lee was saying sort of what's protected him is because his format is so long form. He's like, how can you copy a 12-minute story? Like, you can't.
Yeah.
And then he's also that his style of, it's for him, he said it's about his style of delivery is what you can't copy.
Yeah.
He's like, you can take the joke and you can repeat it endlessly, but unless you know how to deliver it the way that I do.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one can deliver like Stuart Lee. It's so eloquent.
It's to create a very complicated, like, it's so hard to describe. That's why it's like so cutting edge. It like redefines what stand-up comedy can kind of be. Because it's like, you watch an hour 20 show where it's like, it's one kind of thought happening, you know, like it's just continuous and it links itself to earlier parts and like you're seeing all these levels. And honestly, I love stand-up that really like defies my expectations, and it's like how I can't even figure it out. So therefore it's like I can't even claim to be like, I know how he did that. I know how to make that kind of joke, which is like, you know, after a point in stand-up, you go, I get how they do that. Or like, I get how you can go up there and talk about a serious thing with like with your family and it's depressing. And like, you get those kind of little tricks. But then it's like, he's had 30 years to gather all those little tricks, and he just knows how to play moments. It's weird.
I've never seen him not be brilliant.
Yeah.
Like when he does like the 9/11 one, and he has the people come out and like put silly string on him first.
Yeah,
and
then he stands up. That's like one of the first things he ever did.
And then he does the whole thing about like.
He comes out to the stage and people do like party poppers, like unleash all the silly string. He like gets them to come up on stage, and it's like a little jovial, not like super over the top, but just to get them, hey. And then they do it, and then he's like, so on 9/11,
he's like. On November the 9th,
Let's take back the date. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Immediately. And then immediately.
I know who he is.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Like, he's so amazing.
I'm a little slow.
Yeah. Did we just go off so far? By the way, download my album and be shocked at how bad I am in comparison. Just like,
I know. All of a sudden it's like.
Like, there's really like no. Yeah.
I'm so smitten with you now that you know that.
I did see on your profile that you liked it, and I was like, it would be weird for me to be like, by the way, he's my favorite comedian too.
I could just see you studying up. Who does she like? Okay, I gotta go.
No, she just tweets about it all the time. So it's like it came up in my feed, and I was like, what the fuck?
He's so amazing.
Is he like one of your the people you look up to? Is that like
definitely
anybody else?
And then from there, I mean, it's like severe drop off. No,
every other hero's dead.
Well, I don't know. Patton Oswalt, David Cross, like really great. Bob Odenkirk's awesome. Yeah. Like just people who do like really jokes that you just don't expect.
See, that's
for
so
the
funny,
most part.
I grew up on Richard Pryor and George Carlin for me.
Yeah. And I've only recently really got into Carlin specials, and I watched them a bunch over and over. And like really then now I understand like what he he's done and how much I appreciate it now. No. But I got to say, like, it was too adult for when I was growing up.
Exactly.
You know, so it's like I had to retro go back. You
yeah,
know?
But don't yeah. you also feel like when you see that kind of stuff, you all of a sudden you look at all the people now and you're like, oh, I see where they got this from.
Yeah, a little bit. It's weird, it's
like,
because
it's like same thing with musicians.
When people talk about like Richard Pryor, be like, well, you know, that guy's just ripping off Richard. Nobody's ripping off Richard Pryor anymore. Like, whoever was doing that, that was 10 years
Eddie
ago.
Eddie Murphy?
People are now ripping off like Dave Chappelle. Like right. more, like the Dave Chappelle is like getting to that older sentiment of like he's inspired so many thousands of people who have now gotten in the pool. Like you can't deny what he built as individual to Richard Pryor.
Do you know? Think that like kind of getting back to this idea of the internet, do you think, you know, so back in the, I mean, in the 70s and 80s, I'm assuming you would get like an album and it would be much like a music.
An A-track.
Like, and I'm imagining, because I studied sociology when I was studying pop culture, I did the history of music and how, you know, like sort of, and when I was studying it, it was like, we were already in sort of everything with like the internet and all that stuff had already drastically changed the landscape of how music was promoted.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming comedy was sort of the same way, which is like you had an artist that was like albums would come out. They'd be all this like concentrated promotion, limited networks with which to see that artist. So, you know, like you basically had people curating the kind of comedy that was available to you at the record store.
Much like popular radio.
Right. So do you think now because of YouTube and stuff, there's so much. Who's the comedian that kind of basically came? YouTube is what made him.
Bo Burnham?
Yeah.
He's really good. He's actually great. He came from YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, do you think that with the internet, with YouTube, with things like that, it's kind of changed the model for how a comedian
it has,
becomes...
but it's also like there's certain essential, like, truths that will always be right, which is like if you want to do stand up, you'll find a way to go do it and stuff like that. But it has given an avenue to people that they can express themselves. It's certainly not like the model where it's like now you got to go on YouTube and now you got to like have content on Twitter or whatever. And these are all just like different ways for you to get out there. But like at the end of the day, if you've always been like a funny person like throughout history, like there's been a way for you to like go pursue it. And I imagine it was harder before, but like still really, like, if you want to become a YouTube star right now, like, that's fucking hard. Like, right? You could travel the country in the 80s and no one knows you, you know, and that's a hard journey, too. But it's, like, it's also hard to get people
because there's so much choice.
It's always hard to get people to look at your shit, basically.
Can I ask you how you make money?
So, you know, like...
Do you have a day job?
Well, stand-up and writing. Yeah.
Okay, but so, like, you, but you don't have, a conventional day job.
Not anymore, no.
You are a comedy writer and then stand-up.
Yeah.
Do you find that I mean, let's be honest. Like, do you find it is it challenging to find ways to make money?
Well, you'll always get really frustrated when you try and link, you know, how you make money with your dream, and when it starts becoming a reality. Because then it's like, how do you stay true to what it is you want to do? And I see people left and right go, you know, accelerate past me, and it's just a way of, you know, comedy. It's just what's going to happen. So you're always kind of questioning it, and some nights it works great. And sometimes it bombs. So that's another reason you're just questioning kind of what you're doing all the time. But,
I mean, is it hard to make money doing stand-up? How frequently are the gigs paying?
Well, you know, if they're outside of town, they have to pay because then it's like, they have to pay.
I mean, I find it's challenging. Others,
I could just see, like, if I don't get paid, no punchlines, just the setups.
Yeah.
As a writer, it's like I wrote an article for ExoJane, and ExoJane pays me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't write for free. That's my only rule, is I don't write for free.
Right.
It got some play, it got some whatever, and some people read it. Then it got picked up by Huffington Post, which does not pay its writers.
Right.
And then people were all on my Twitter like, oh my gosh, your article's on Huffington Post. That's awesome. But like Huffington Post doesn't pay their writers. And the thing is, like, as a writer, it's very challenging to find. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you're encouraged to like, oh, well, you write for free and then you get some stuff and then you can. And I feel like, is it the same for comedy where it's like you're sort of encouraged?
Try being a photographer.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely hard all over, sir. But I think
try being a photographer.
You just try to be a photographer. Okay. I know. I would suck. I have no ability.
Okay.
But it's, I think it's like, yeah, you got to figure out a way. Like it makes you have to be a little like, not devious, but just like keyed into trying to figure out how to make money, you know, and look for opportunities. And like, I'll take, you know, man, so many shit gigs, so many bad things, you know. But I mean, it's like, I would love, I thought about this recently, like, I really just want to do stand up and do it really well. And like, just if I could do that and make my money off of that, that would be like a dream. That would be the coolest thing. If it, but then there's like shitty road gigs, there's shitty, you know, tons of reality, you know, thrown my way where you have to kind of make a compromise of like, well, I'll go work on some shows and do some kind of writing. It's more like creative consultant work is what I get. Mm-hmm. It's between writing and just kind of being a producer where you're just like, this would be the funniest thing. But it's not like writing a man enters the room. Sometimes that happens. But like, you know, those are usually like the guild, you know, union jobs that pay a lot more and are good.
Right. Do you think
sometimes I'll do warm up? You know, I'll do audience warm up out here.
Is that fun?
No, I would love to do more. I would love the money, but I think like certain audiences, it's been great, and then certain times I've been like, "Wow, why am I doing this? Why did I say this would be fun?" Like
when I first moved to LA, I used to go to friends' shows, you know, and see the warm up guys, and I would just sit there shaking my head, like, "Yeah, this poor guy," like because everybody's there for the show.
I'm just a little too real. Like that sounds. You know what? I'm going to redact that statement. Okay. I'm not too real, and that's like why they won't accept me. But it's just like I don't have the jokes anymore that like I think would have kind of worked. It's like usually like if you're trying to get good at stand up, there's some sort of difference you're doing. So if you're kind of throwing weird little curveballs, they're just like, what? Like, we just want to watch the game show,
right.
We don't know what we're from the Grove. Like we were netted here during the afternoon and they threw a big tarp over us and gathered us over here. Like, you know, they just have no, I've seen people like almost falling asleep, like, you know, so that's a rough kind of
thing
to do. You said earlier that it's always hard to make a living when you're trying to like link your dreams to your job.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's kind of a more modern convention. Like this idea that when you perform or do art, it's like the pleasure the pleasure of the process is its own reward. I feel like that's a relatively new
concept
attitude.
Sure. Well, you know what? I am nothing if not the product of my generation. You know, like I could be like, you know, it would be, I remember Jim Gaffigan said this and I thought it was a pretty astute thing. He's like, yeah, like doing an ad for Pepsi, you know, he's like, you can call, be like, hey, that's really like, you know, what are you doing? You're doing an ad for Pepsi. But it's like, yeah, but if I do that ad for Pepsi, I don't have to go work at the Pepsi factory. It's like, that's the reality. It's like, if I don't sell these out, I'm going to have to work at Starbucks. Right. Like I can be like, Starbucks is the devil. But it's like, you know, at the end of the day, I need to live.
Well, that's why,
and therefore, it, you know, be able to express my art.
But
that's almost
like,
kind of shitty to be like.
Yeah,
you know,
but that's the balance of I've said my entire career and other people's careers in this town is that it's the balance of art and commerce.
Yeah.
You have to do your art so that you can do your commerce and the commerce to do your art. You have to like do the job to make the money do something.
I think it's funny because it's like it's almost like this hippie kind of thing of being like, you know, well, capitalism, like, whoa, so you just want to make money. What, then it's just exponential? And it's like, no, I just want to live off of my art, which is hard. And you kind of have to be a little cunning to make that happen, you know?
It's
hard. And I have turned down small, like, things that I just go, that's so outside of who I am. And it's like, that's a bad call.
It's
like,
a lot of work.
You know, like, because that would be detrimental to the long run, you know?
I think everyone goes, even in doing porn or whatever, it's, you know, on a certain degree, I like to make money. But there are certain jobs where I could be totally desperate. And someone like, will you come do this blow bang? And that's just not, like, what I'm into. I won't even entertain. I'm just like, no, it's just really not.
Yeah,
like,
not.
I don't know how to do that and
have
dignity. Like,
but I'm willing to learn.
No, I mean, there's some people that's really keyed into their sexuality or whatever. And so
that's
such
a funny
for me,
euphemism, though, for what it feels like is to get blow banged. It's like, I feel like me doing a CMT show is getting blow banged.
Right.
You know, like, doing the compromise of integrity. I mean, but life is compromise.
No,
and it's
not.
Like,
I mean, because I've compromised. Like, I've done stuff like that. I don't
every
like
every breath you take is a compromise.
I've done things like my friend's hot sister, which I like to do porn that I came in to be sort of subversive and punk rock or whatever. So I would prefer to do things that are always sort of a little bit challenging and weird and and like where I could go like, no, like if you watch that movie though, it's like really subversive. Like we really, my first boy girl movie, we did this thing where like, let's do a movie about a girl that goes to Hollywood to make it and just gets fucking brutalized. So let's make people so uncomfortable. And we did it. It was like this huge fuck you. And we did it. But at the same time, so to me, a compromise is doing my friend's hot sister, you know, which is to me is like, it's kind of boring. It's like, but okay. Like, I'll, yeah. But then there's something where it's like, well, you do a gangbang? And I'm like, ah, it's just not really my, like, I don't, also, it's not my, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's just like really outside the scope of.
There's also kind of this attitude, say like with writing, like where there's notes that'll come from the network or whoever you're working for. And you can be like, notes? That's crazy. But it's also like, there's just certain things you don't see. And it's like, there's certain skills you're learning when you do things that you don't, you know, it's not your go-to, but you're fine with it. And therefore you learn, like, no one wants to be the MC of a stand-up comedy show, but like the skill you learn is how to start talking to people, address them, and command some energy. Like, so there, and that's a skill you're gonna be using as a headliner. Like, you literally can't learn how to headline unless you do some MCing. Well,
it's like,
kind of figure out that a little bit.
I've always said to the people I mentor and my assistants and things like that, I always say, like, you learn something from everything you do. And 9 times out of 10, you learn never to do it again.
Yeah. Big, huge. And, I mean, like, and that's like, such a huge thing.
You got to do it, but so then you kind of go, you know, I did it, but I'm never going to do it again.
Yeah. There's so many times, like, I could totally do, like, a shitty, hacky joke that, like, pops into my head. Like, I have the dumb observations that everybody else has. That's, like, so, like, I think I said today, I was like, IKEA sounds like a Southern woman saying IKEA. And I was like, that's a Jeff Foxworthy shitty joke. And I was like, that totally came into my head. And if I were to be like, I didn't think of that, I'd be lying.
I like it. I mean? It's a good joke.
Do you ever feel like there's a weird sort of power of the internet where maybe jokes that you're not totally into are now up there and you just kind of have to
go with it?
Like, we're, like, we're kind of the first generation to live in a place where, like, there is no deleting.
I do, like, kind of wonder. Like,
there's no forgetting.
I've totally thought about that because it's like, if we're honest, like, the public eye towards stand-up is really, like, focused on kind of like, where's this guy going to go? Like, is it going to be bad? And, like, you know, is it going to take us down a road? And, like, say I like to talk about, you know, I don't know, like, it sounds weird to say feminist doctrine, but just kind of like stuff that's really kind of happening, but also like maybe under such a veil of sarcasm, and then it leads you down a path. And then at the end, I'm saying kind of totally counter like ideas, but you're laughing. Like at the end of this long joke about diarrhea that I'm doing right now, which is a kind of like a joke of like men get this and women get that. And then at the end, it's like about like school shootings where it's like men do this more and like why this is good. And that's the humor, you know, but it's like if you were to take a snippet, it would probably read poorly on me.
Well,
you know what I mean? And that's kind of a thought I've had, but it's also like, I do think like I need to just be like open on stage and like, talk about the things that genuinely interest me in ways that I do think are funny. And
I have this crazy thought. Just, it's like, cause you always are growing on this generation of this internet. The weird thing for me is like, you have to, like, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, your stuff's going to be out there. It's like same thing with a porn star, same thing with me. So you're 20, 30 years from now, you're going to have to look and go, oh my God, that wasn't it wasn't as funny as I thought I was, or thank God I'm better. Or
but that's the self-importance.
That's just,
of
the,
a
but
comic.
That's the weird
really,
thing.
Really, no one would care if I stopped performing tomorrow. Like, you know
but
what no, I mean?
But
like,
I'm saying, but it's weird is that you have to look at this history where my history is I'm the guy taking the pictures and I'm not in the pictures. I don't have to watch myself get old. I don't have to see myself go through whatever. I'm lucky. It's just pictures with me. But you guys, it's in front of the camera. So
a little bit. Like, you do just have to kind of like stand by your word, which is kind of an adult like concept. Like, I remember because as it was coming through stand up, like, it would concern me where I'm like, what if like I say something like that's off in the moment, or right. I really yell at an audience member or something, and that's just like frozen in time. But I was also like, you know, if that did happen, I could own it and talk about it in a way. Like, I'm not going to lose my mind. Right, I still have this like empathy, and like whatever I've said, I can go, here's why, and what, here's the moment. And, you know, like, so just stand by what you do, and just that'll be kind of fine in the end. Like, I don't care if in 30 years, you know, like, there's a bunch of shit that I've said that's out there, because like, as long as I've been like, yep, that's me. Like, yeah, that's pretty consistent.
Yeah, here's the part where he went nuts on stage and peed himself.
My hope with the porn is always that it will precede me. Like, people are like, oh, people know you did porn. I'm like, oh, I hope they look at the pictures first. I was beautiful. God damn. But with that, it seems it is time to wrap it up. We have entertained people long enough for free, I might add, to be very meta. Guys,
this was so free.
Meta metal. So can you tell everyone where they can find you, where they can download your album?
And go to hamptonyunt.com. You can download my first album for free, which is a DIY project I did like 6 years ago, and it's called Unbearable. And, or you could sell out and get my new album on iTunes for $10 or Spotify for free. I don't care. And it's called Bearable.
Awesome.
Awesome. And as always, y'all know where to find me on Twitter at Sovereign Sire, and on my shiny new website, ilovesov.com. Free blogs, podcasts, and galleries for all of my sweet sire knots. Sayonara.